This is an AMI podcast.
Hey there, Brock Richardson here, host of The Neutral Zone on AMI Audio. Can't find the stories you're looking for on parasports and athletes? Time to join me and my panel of sports enthusiasts as we discuss the big plays, the big trades, and whatever's making headlines in the para and pro sports world. Check out The Neutral Zone today on your favorite podcasting app or platform.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Muthan, and you're about to embark on the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
It's full octane Kelly and Ramya with all the fixins.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Company. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI Audio's on-air community, and everyone's invited. And now, the big man himself, Kelly McDonald.
Hey there, welcome to the Thursday edition of the program. Thanks for being with us. We're here from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern every day if you're new to Kelly and Company. We run this show and then repeat it at 5 p.m. Eastern and at midnight. We're also available via podcast, just in case you listen, start liking and saying, yeah, but I got to go do something. So check back later. Ramya Muthan, my co-host, hanging out over there, and I have the question of the day for you.
All right.
So I haven't updated my iPhone, and we have been in this conversation lately off and on. We've had this subject that people have been speaking on TV about how you can have the phone for 2, maybe 3 years. Then all of a sudden, the weird things start happening with every update, as if somebody's going into the phone, this phone sold, those updates are deprogramming, doing damage in some way. Battery, for example. And this has been a lot of the discussion. So my battery now almost lasts like half a day before I'm paranoid and throwing it on charge. So if if I charge it overnight, take it off by 2 o'clock or so, it's down already to 42%.
Oh, that sucks. Okay.
Now, mine's a few years old. I really should have gone and got another one last year. Yeah, I think so. Then along comes the pandemic. Must have been. A year ago now, I should have actually got another one. I have a 6 that's still as a backup or basically as an iPod, dances along merrily. It's fine. The battery will last. Hey, man, this thing's, I had charged it since like yesterday. Cool. And I'm using it to play audio on it. The personal phone that I walk around with, it just sits there. It's like basically dying from just sitting there. So I would suggest that's what's happening. Now, we have Michael Babcock on. We talk Android and Apple with him. You've used an Android. I know this is probably much the same with anything, especially if we buy into the fact that the companies make it to last so long because then we throw things away and go buy new all the time. No, it's hard to go get any of these things fixed. I need a new battery. Well, that'll cost you basically the price of the phone.
That's right.
So,
which is why every 2 years or so, you're buying a new phone.
Correct.
Your number one point.
Mm-hmm. Your thought is, I'll just go get another phone. Because that's really all you can do now.
That's what I've always done. It's not necessarily a comparison between, should I get a new phone or should I just replace the battery? Should I get a new phone or should I fix the screen? Anytime anything, especially when it comes to software issues, glitches, you know, everyone else is 3 upgrades ahead of me type thing, I just go, all right, time to get a new phone. Now, I've always given my phones that I'm getting rid of, like the ones that I'm done with, to my mom.
Aren't
this has happened forever. Aren't I generous?
Because
she doesn't. No.
No,
she doesn't care.
She doesn't use it the way she uses it. Just
that's
for something
what I'm saying.
Use. It's a bit different than the things you want it for.
Web browsing, Facebook scrolling, text messaging, and calling. That's
and since she's always getting your secondhand phone, she really doesn't know how long it's supposed to last or what it's how it's supposed to perform anyway.
But this is the problem. So I don't know what it is, but I could use my phone for 2.5 years is what happened with my 8 Plus, okay, my iPhone 8 Plus. I used it for 2.5 years, gave it to my mom. I was like, I don't know, Mama, it's glitchy, it's slow, but here, see how long you can use it. And she was getting this phone from a Samsung, what was it, a 7? Mm-hmm. She was at the Samsung 7 when I gave her this phone. Yeah, like old, right? Mm-hmm. And then she's now using this perfectly fine. She's like, I don't know what's wrong with it. It's and it's great. I always keep my hardware in mint condition, like at least the screens and no scratches and things like that. So she's like, it feels like a brand new phone. So it's got to be that she just uses it for simple applications what we do.
Well,
right?
And the demand we put on it, even using glitch. VoiceOver or any that's screen reader is going to just, you know, suck all the energy out of it. And again, that's why I stop and think, is that what's going on? Is it really the performance, especially when you hear all these issues, can't get anything fixed because they don't really want you to, and the wear and tear? Well, I'm not really doing anything extra with it except using it. So, and I also think
tiny, tiny things.
Well, and Rob, we expect phones every time to go faster and faster because they do at first. Everything
and the batteries to last longer and longer.
Yeah, so true. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there, folks. Food for thought, because it is always that topic, and I'll probably hang on to this for too long as it is. Let's see what's coming up on Kelly and Company today. Play Me, an award-winning audio podcast series, kicks off its new season with a lineup of plays that speak in this uncertain time. So we're going to hear a little bit about that as we speak with the co-host and one of its producers to learn about the upcoming season going on.
We're hanging out with Calgary Community Reporter Anthony Hodgetts. He's sharing resources and information on an online offering from Inside Out Theater.
Excellent. Always sticking with the theater stuff. On Curious Minds, well, Christine Malick features a new project that actually describes astrological images for the blind and low vision community. We'll get into that in hour two right here on Kelly and Company. U.S. drug maker Eli Lilly has some promising new information on its COVID-19 treatment.
This is the first major study of Eli Lilly's COVID-19 antibody drug treatment and those in nursing homes. In November, the FDA allowed emergency use of Eli Lilly's antibody drug as a treatment for mild or moderate cases of COVID-19. It's a one-time treatment. It's given through an IV. The company says among nursing home residents who got the drug, their risk was reduced by as much as 80%. Residents and staff who got the drug had up to a 57% lower risk of getting COVID-19. Nursing homes and other long-term care facilities have been hit hard by the pandemic. They account for nearly 40% of the deaths. I'm Rita Foley.
We are happy to hear anything that moves the needle in death prevention, Rummy.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And as we can tell, every day, new news.
New news, and all I keep saying to people, vaccine is wonderful. Treatment is just immensely important if we can figure out that way to make that difference at some point. A jackpot winning Powerball ticket worth more than $731 million was sold in an old coal mining town in a remote corner of Maryland.
The winning Powerball ticket worth $731 million was sold at Coney Market in Lona Coning, Maryland. The Maryland Lottery says the Allegheny County store will receive a $100,000 bonus for selling the winning ticket to the fifth largest lottery prize in U.S. history. However, just who will collect the money may never be known. Maryland allows winners to remain anonymous. An even larger Mega Millions jackpot will be available Friday night. No one won the $970 million prize earlier this week. I'm Mike Hempen.
If you had a way that no one would ever know you won the money, would you tell?
No. No, I really? Wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. Would you?
I think people would be able to tell. Why that guy got that painted on grin like Ronald McDonald? What's wrong with him? Like, I'm telling you, I don't know how you would hide that. How would your lifestyle, unless you actually got a kick out of living a dual life?
Okay, what could happen is you tell some close people, they let it out, and now everybody's asking you. You could deny it forever.
Nah. You could just be greedy. No, I'm not giving anything, because that's really what you think. People are asking because they want something. You know, somebody needs a surgery that they have to pay for as opposed to, you know, something. So you would either have to say no or, you know what, I blew it all. I made a stupid Bitcoin investment. You're a liar. Bitcoin is never mind. I don't know, because I'd probably tell people, because I'd have too much fun using the money to play jokes on everyone.
True.
That's how you would know. Oh, would I have a ball. Anyway, folks, you can now start thinking what you would do with it and taking notes on the subject. So looking for a unique way to take some notes? Michael Fair, he's got you covered. He's got the award-winning accessible app called Bear. We'll get into it in a moment right here. It's Kelly and Company on a Thursday. Thanks for being with us. Stay tuned. More active on Twitter. So if you want to give her a follow, she is at All Rams and I am at AMI Kelly Mac. Check us out on Twitter. If you want to follow AMI Audio at AMI Audio, good place to keep up on the shows, what's happening as we go through our broadcast day over here at AMI Audio. Check out the Accessible Media Inc. Facebook page in case you want a little bit more of the corporate aspect and getting some thoughts and opinions in and maybe having conversation, or simply call us 1-866-509-4545. Maybe give us a book recommendation, anything that you might want to suggest for the show, or just say hi. And if you give us permission, we'll try to use your message on air. Had a lot of great messages yesterday, Ramya, people dropping lines to celebrate our 1,000th show. So we do have to salute everyone. Thank you so much. What a very special day for us.
Yes, and we're all a team, guys. It's so nice hearing from the community and the listeners and everybody, because without you guys, we have no show that we're super proud of and that could be up there for 1,001 shows now. So it was nice hearing from everybody for sure.
You bet.
All right. Well, on Thursdays, we hear from one specific tech guy. His name is Mike Fair. Let's bring him on.
Hi, I'm Mike Fair. iPhones, iPods, and iPads are everywhere, and they're doing great things for the blind. We explore all that, plus audio entertainment, dramas, podcasts, internet radio, and games. We share it all on Kelly and Company.
That's right. It's not just tech. It's also audio entertainment. Mike, you keep us posted with brand new and cool developments on Thursdays. And we're kind of on a theme here from last week, right? Because last week we talked about to-dos and task management. Well, what if the thought of keeping your to-do tasks and other ideas and thoughts inside notebooks, nested within notebooks, make your inner messy self cringe? I think we all have a little bit of that side. If that's the case for you, Mike Fair feels your pain. And thankfully, there's a wonderful, award-winning, very accessible app for you, and it's called Bear. And most of it can actually be used for free, Mike. So you're going to give us the rundown. Why is this app that's called Bear, why has it gotten so much positive attention from people?
Well, Shiny Frog Limited really did a good job of nailing what you want out of a note-taking app. You wanted to be able to get in there and create new notes quickly, but you don't always want to have to worry about where they go. So Notebooks 10, what I covered last week, that's for the people who love their notebooks and nested notebooks about, you know, ideas and similar things. That, yeah. You know, this is really for those people who want the benefit. They kind of want your cake and eat it too. You want to be able to keep all your ideas, but you don't want to have to bother organizing. You want something else to do it. And that something else is Bear. They've got it so that all you have to do, instead of going into X folder to put like clothing, closet, socks, you know, to take a note about a red sock or something, you can just write, I have a red sock. And then down below, you could put a tag, like a number sign, a hashtag basically saying clothes, hashtag closet. It's a very simple system to just start using. And then when you want to basically get to different places in that mess of notes you've created, you go into the sidebar and you can go through and there are all your tags and you can just focus in on, oh, I want all the notes on clothing. Then I want all the notes on socks specifically. And it's just there. It narrows the list down so that you can quickly get at what you want.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit more about the layout, Michael, please. Maybe get a bit more detail for us.
There are three basic elements, and on the iPhone, you're kind of dealing with one at a time. So there's the notes list, and that contains all the notes within a category, like within the framework that you'll select with the sidebar that you have. So if you're in by default, it shows all notes that you've done. And you can sort this in the settings within the app. You can sort this list in different ways, by A to Z, by date, by all that kind of stuff, front to back, back to front. So it's very adjustable to what you want. And so that's like a complete note list of any notes in that category. Now, the sidebar is, think of it like a combination folder directory and menu. So you have access to settings and trash and to do different categories of notes, including to-dos and other things. You also have access to all the different tags that you've made, and you can go through. So you don't have to remember necessarily to find the note in question. You can go through and there'll be a list of all those tags that you can just double tap. And as soon as you do that, then you go into the notes list narrows to that tag's notes. So if I tap on Kelly Co., which is the tag I have for notes based on for the show, it immediately gets me into any notes I've taken for segments that I've put in there for that show. And it's just right there. And if I want, you know, some other project like church or a couple of the projects I'm working on as well, I can similarly keep everything neat and separate without putting a lot of effort into doing that. So
just by adding the tags.
Yeah, just by adding little tags as you make the notes. I usually put them on the bottom so they're out of the way, and then you just add stuff above the tag. You don't have to do it that way. You can put the tag pretty much anywhere as soon as you think of it. And it's just like a hashtag. And if you want a multi-word tag, you do a hashtag, then you write the words, and then you do another hashtag, and that tells it where the tag begins and ends. And you can have multi-layered tags. You can nest them with slash. Character between, so clothing slash socks in your tag would nest those words. And so you can create the same kind of folder structure, but without a lot of the effort and without having to think in advance, oh, I should put the note here, because it'll just go where it needs to go. It's everything's stored in plain text. Everything's open format, open source. So it's basically... you will always have access to your information. There's no proprietary stuff. The markup language that Bear uses is just, it's all text. So there's no sort of encryption. There's nothing like that. Unless you can protect your notes, that is available. I believe that's a pro feature, one of the ones that you get if you subscribe to Bear Pro. And you can certainly protect them with Face ID, Touch ID, whatever your phone has, passcode. But you don't have to. It's all up to you. So very open-minded that way.
Anything else you want to tell us about the sidebar bit?
Yeah, the sidebar basically, so you open it up and you have the first button in the sidebar is notes. Then you have tag notes. And if you double tap on that, that opens up, expands a list of other categories that Bear takes care of for you. There are filters that are always there, and that includes a filter for any untagged notes that you haven't bothered to tag, notes that you've done today, and so anything you've done within the day. To-dos, I think, was another one. There are about four of them in those automatically kept categories. And then there's trash, so anything you've deleted, you can go and resurrect or do what you want to do there. And then there is settings. And that's where you get into the settings of the app. And so there's a bunch there. There's sort. You can choose how lists are sorted, how tags are sorted, all kinds of different things in the various settings for that. So there's quite a bit there. It's just out of the way until you need it. And the sidebar is basically your gateway. It's like the Windows button, right? It's the gateway to the operating system kind of level stuff. And this is kind of similar. You know, the sidebar is your interface with all the organizational power of Bear.
Hmm. How about that editor? What's it like to work in?
It's nice. It's a very simple currently text editor. It doesn't take up the full screen. You can use the rotor and stuff to go back and forth, you know, by character, word, line. I use an external keyboard, so it's just everything's very natural. I can use the arrow keys to go up and down, and the you know, move around easily, and you just type your notes into the editor. And then if you flick right, there's a bunch of other things, including some kind of handy ones, like the hashtag button that you double tap on and hold, and you get a list of all your hashtags. So if you want to insert a hashtag into a note, you just double tap on that and bring up a list of your hashtags that you've created and just pick the one you want. So you don't even have to retype them if you can't remember exactly how you did a tag. It's a complete other way of getting at your tags and other things too. Dates, files, there's extra buttons for a lot of different things to be able to insert into notes. So it's very kind of simple to get at and keep track of what you're doing. You can link notes together. You can choose to have a note be a to-do. And to-dos are pretty simple. Like they you can check and uncheck them. You can't really give them dates and things. So it's a very basic to-do task management kind of thing. I think Notebooks 10 is your better bet if you really need something like that, or just another app entirely, like Things or Reminders for that sort of thing. But it's there. And I know they're working on updating the editor. That's one thing they sort of gave away in their blog at the end of last year. So that is upcoming. A complete sort of refresh, change, improvement to the editor is fast approaching. I don't know what else they're working on, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did more in the to-do space as well. So yeah.
Glad that you're doing kind of this back and forth between the differences between Notebooks 10, which you highlighted last week, and this one, because I feel like this one isn't for everybody, just like Notebooks 10 isn't for everybody, because if you really need that intricate organizational system that you've categorized and subcategorized and put into its sequences, this could be kind of like a real recipe for disaster for you, the Bear app. But is there help available, Mike?
Yeah, there's a lot of help. There's bear.app is the website. You can go there and learn all about Bear. There's a help button in the settings where you can get at the buttons for support and buttons for FAQ, which is the frequently asked questions. And they deal with a lot of stuff in the FAQ. There's also welcome notes right in Bear. There's a welcome to Bear note that you can go into, and they demonstrate some features right in those notes and sort of describe, you know, the different elements of Bear in a series of sort of choose your own adventure welcome notes that are linked together that you can go between by double tapping on the links and getting to the different notes. So it you do need the rotor to use this really well, especially if you don't have an external keyboard. And it's the developers are very conscious of accessibility. They've supported VoiceOver for quite a while now. And there's no sign they're going to jump ship there. So that's really good.
Is there ways for you to kind of, I mean, obviously you can send an email at any time, but have you done any of that? Have you had to ask about something or request, hey, could you guys consider doing this, or heard anything on what you've read as to that responsiveness of them and their dedication?
I've heard they're pretty responsive. I haven't had to yet. But they, from what I've heard from others, they're in that camp of developers that do get back to you when you write to them. So from what I've heard, they're pretty responsive there, and eager to keep supporting. It's not only blindness; there are other fonts in there for dyslexic, I guess, people who suffer from that. There are fonts that can help with that, and presumably other cognitive abilities, disabilities as well. So it goes beyond just blindness. So they are very conscious of you know, people with disabilities, want to support them. And so very happy to see that.
Awesome. Well, you can attain Bear, as you said, free from the App Store, and then you can see if it suits you. Find out more at www.bear.app. We also have the link directly on our blog, ami.ca/KellyCo. We're starting some cool stuff next week with you, Mike, as well as Michael Babcock, on alternatives to tech giants. So I'm curious to see where the conversations go with that, because there will be multiple. And until then, have a great week.
You too. And keep in mind, both of these note takers, everything is open source. Well, not open source, but the formats are free. Your text is always yours. So.
Very cool. Thank you for that tidbit. Michael Fair, he joins us every week to talk tech as well as audio entertainment. And today he was highlighting the Bear app. It's for note-taking and to-do management.
We'll take a break. Why are flowers named what they are? Gardener Susan Kearney is going to run us through a list of flowers with significant meanings. We'll talk to her in a moment. When you get time, check out the Kelly and Company podcast. You simply subscribe and can download it at your convenience using your favorite podcatcher. You can listen to the show parceled out, those segments that we do every 15 minutes or so. Hey, you can find them, pick your favorite ones that you like and just listen to those. But we recommend check out the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience, especially this week. The team is putting in some extra thoughts to recognizing our 1,000th show, but really a lot of memories. Something really cool, Rum, that's going on. Mr. Agnew is doing our card on Friday, and we got a sample yesterday of some of the things he's found from the last 1,000 episodes or more.
Right.
Things that never made it to air. Some of them were not meant to. But he's going to make a little string of them and play them at the end of the Friday show on the podcast. So likely very popular. And this is kind of in response to Michael Babcock's request to some of the behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to hear some of the, what do they say, the bold and the beautiful, or in our case, the bold and somewhat ugly sounding at the time, Matt will have a bunch of that for the on the audio vanity card this Friday. So he's putting it together. But today you're up
beautifully ugly.
Yeah, wonderfully ugly.
Yes.
If you want to say that, I think that's a nice way to say it. And Rummy is handling our audio vanity card for today. But it's time to talk a little gardening with Susan Kearney.
Susan Kearney. Join me on Kelly and Company to learn about the joy of gardening by using touch, taste, scent, and sound.
We cover everything on the show, and today, since we've been doing a gardening segment for so long, Susan thought it might be a good idea if we kind of understood things, so let's discuss the meaning of flowers. Hello, Suze.
Hello.
Welcome back to the show. Always a pleasure to have you on board with us. And happy January, happy New Year's and all that stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what made you want to cover this particular subject?
Well, it's because we don't have flowers in our gardens right now. And I started looking at different flowers that, you know, you can order from a florist or whatever. And I was telling a friend of mine this, and she said, oh, I have an article that talks about the meaning of flowers throughout the ages, actually, and across many different cultures of what they're used for, and even into the colors of the flowers, which is very interesting. Some flowers, if the different flowers in within the colors of those flowers actually have other meanings. Mm. For instance, white flowers are in Western society are often used for funerals.
Right.
And that has always been in Western society. Many societies have they use pink for joy and friendship. Those are just some of the, and I chose my three favorites because the list is very long.
Oh, yeah.
And very differed, you know, different flowers. And my first one here is Queen Anne's Lace. Now, that is a flower that grows in the garden, and I've always had Queen Anne's Lace in the garden. I really like it. I like the smell of it. It attracts a lot of the bees and the butterflies. And it is a June blooming plant, so it blooms beautifully in June. Interestingly enough, this particular flower means protection.
Oh.
And which I did not know, but I have always had a clump of Queen Anne's Lace. In fact, I guess some of the older plants, because it's a perennial, they've lasted a long time. Some of the plants actually came from my first garden.
Wow.
I actually dug them up. Yeah, because they're a tuber. The other name for them, if you want, anybody wanted to look them up, is actually wild carrot. It is a member of the carrot family, and also dill and parsley. It belongs in that particular family. But it's very beautiful. And to think that it actually means protection. People used to put it in their gardens for protection, which I found very interesting.
Well, I find, okay, the carrot part, obviously a wild carrot, it makes sense. It's the Queen Anne name, and I'm sure as you look through this book with your friend, you kind of wondered, the genesis of names must have been absolutely amazing for some of them. Is there a particular reason it's called this one, and did you always feel that I want to say, and maybe this is a bit too far-fetched, did you feel kind of that the name was appropriate in what it means in protection?
I'm not really sure. Some of them, yes, I think so. But what surprised me is that I have always wanted to have that in my garden, and I didn't realize that that was actually a tradition for a long time. So that protection was in, and I didn't know that. That really surprised me. So that's why I pulled that one out. I thought that was interesting. My next one is dahlias. And I love dahlias, and they are a fall plant. They are a bulb, and they come up beautifully in the fall. I don't have any in my garden, but I usually get them as a cut flower and put them on my table. I love touching them. They are very interesting. They have very thick stems. They stand very straight, and the flowers feel like lacy pom-poms. That's the way I would explain it.
See, I like that.
That sounds gorgeous.
They're really beautiful, and they come in, you know, different colors.
Are they sturdy?
Red.
They're pretty, like, you can actually enjoy that feel. You know, sometimes we have to be careful of the fragility.
Oh, no, they're very hardy, and you'll often find them growing in fields. They plant them in fields, and they are usually cut in the fall. They're a fall-cut flower, and their meaning is very interesting. Dignity, confidence, and strength, and a bouquet of them actually says gratitude. So that, and that really does explain that. If you touch that flower, and even the name dahlia, it's beautiful, and it actually is all of those things. So I found that one really interesting.
And was there a cultural reference to this as well, how long it's been used, or, you know, in what kind of contexts, or was it just this information
some
gratitude?
Some of them did, yes. It, mainly in the colors of the different the different flowers. And another time, I will actually go through that on another segment, because it was that I found very interesting. For some cultures, some colors were actually very significant in and so that I found very interesting. My next choice was the chrysanthemum. And this, too, is a fall flowering plant. And it's usually the last plant that comes out of my garden. And they're very sturdy. And sometimes we'll get frost, and I'll go out, and they'll still be quite happy. Their little faces will be quite happy, and so on. Or I'll take the pots and move them into a warmer area. I've actually pulled out my chrysanthemums in November when I'm putting in the planters where I put all my Christmas greens, and they're still there, and then they have to go. But this particular, the mums are very interesting. Chrysanthemums are very interesting. I love them. They're very hardy, and actually they They say that their hardiness and their beauty, and they are often the last flowers in our gardens, and they mean cheeriness, longevity, and happiness, even during what may be difficult times. So I chose that one because I thought that was interesting. It yeah. It speaks to a lot that everyone is going through now. You know, that hardy plant. Oh, that was interesting.
Would there we're going to get into ones that didn't make the list in a second, but that you say at this time, Sue, if you had done this a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, do you think your list would be the same?
No. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. I would have gone. Now I did. I did. You know, look at some of the things that I would have put in. I would have perhaps done, maybe something like roses, daisies, carnations, things like that. I would have stuck to those kinds of plants. These ones I just found. I think during these times, I just thought, wow. It's very interesting because, and those three that I've mentioned are actually three of my absolute favorite plants.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what about the ones that didn't make the list? Was there anything in particular?
Yes, I actually on the list, and it was interesting because today I was thinking about getting some flowers. And I was thinking, oh, I'd really like some daisies. I have daisies in my garden, and they're wild. They came in from somewhere, probably a bird or some from somewhere, and they grow along the fence. And they're also a perennial, but they're very interesting. And they mean playful happiness, playful and happiness. So it's playfulness and happiness. So I thought that was really interesting. That one I probably would have chosen, and not the other ones. The same with lilies. Now, lilies are one of the ones, of course, as I mentioned. they are ones that within our Western civilization, we actually have lilies for. Funerals and so on too, along with the white roses, and yes. They actually mean purity. in some cultures, they would not have white roses at someone's funeral. It would be disrespectful. So that I found very very interesting too.
I find it interesting when you make that comment about some things that end up in your garden that you never actually set out to put in there. It's
yeah.
interesting when you think like, because I don't even think about how many things could be brought in there unbeknownst to you just through nature, through the regular what's going on, like the birds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's how the daisies came into my garden, and they every year they come over, they keep on multiplying and growing along the fence, but they make a lovely show. So that's, and I thought, oh yeah, playfulness and happiness. So there you are.
So where can we find these meanings?
there's many places, but one that I, the article that I've taken some of them from was from the magazine Better Homes and Gardens. This is where I took some of these from, but there are many different with many of my books that I have on flowers, they also talk about this. It's actually a very interesting subject. How our plants actually have meaning to different meanings to us.
Yeah, it's fascinating in so many cultures and the influence. Thanks, Suze.
Thanks.
Okay, we do this conversation with Sue. We have our gardening chats every second Thursday right here on Kelly and Company. Coming up in a moment, Play Me, an award-winning audio drama podcast series, kicks off its new season with a lineup of plays that speak to these uncertain times. We speak with one of the co-hosts and producers to learn more next. Look for us on TuneIn Radio, Radio Player Canada, and OOTune. Several great apps in which you can listen to our content. Just do a search. If you prefer one of those apps over the other, that's all right. Long as you make sure to look for AMI Audio, TuneIn Radio, Radio Player Canada, and OOTune. Several great apps in which to listen and stream AMI Audio. Rabia Muthan, my co-host, she's at the home studio in Toronto. Kelly McDonald here in the London, Ontario home studio. Rum, we know how much I'm into theater and drama. We know how much I'm into radio plays of any kind. And we've now see this burgeoning field of podcasts that are really involving drama in some form. I'm really curious with our next guest to get into kind of what they do, what it's all about. Play Me is an award-winning audio drama podcast series that kicks off its extraordinary new season with a lineup of plays that speak to these uncertain times. Joining us now to talk about their upcoming season is co-host and producer Laura Mullins. Laura, welcome to Kelly and Company. Thanks for making time for us.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you.
Laura, first of all, for people who are unfamiliar with Play Me, can you tell us a little bit about when you guys started and what you do?
Absolutely. Well, my business partner, Chris Tolley, and I started playing, I guess, in 2016. We are theater artists. We had a theater company. And we just thought, you know, theater takes so long to make, and it's on for such a short period of time, and then it disappears. And we wanted to have another opportunity to have people listen to these plays. And so we put it together, and, you know, we found that people were really anxious to hear theater as well as attended in person. And then CBC picked us up in 2018. And then the pandemic hit, and the theaters are closed. So it's one of those things that started off small and has kind of grown over the years.
That's amazing.
What we do is we take plays, theater scripts, and we transform them into audio dramas. So somewhere between an old style radio play and a contemporary podcast, and we include all the Foley and sound design and everything to make you feel like you're in the room with the actors.
Nice. Ooh, so nice. Because I know
awesome.
Some of the temptation would be to, hey, you know, if you're a theater troupe and you get the rights and we're okay to do it, or if someone's written something, especially if you look at fringe plays or festival plays, that the person who wrote it or the company presenting it, it's theirs. It's easy to say, well, get us a really clean, good recording and let's use that. But this allows you to merge the old radio show style, the podcast style, and theater. So awesome, Laura.
Yeah, we don't record it live on stage, or we never did, because you can't get the same quality of sound. Mm-hmm. So before, we used to record in the studio, and now because of the pandemic, we're actually recording remotely. We send mics out all over the country, and actually we just sent a mic out to London, England. And then we get the actors together on Zoom and then have them record on their computers directly. So it's quite the feat to pull off the feeling of being in the theater. But it's a lot of fun, and I feel like particularly now that we can't go out, you can sort of transport yourself to all these different places and circumstances, and it's just a great way to connect audiences and Canadians and artists together.
How inclusive.
Yes, and we're seeing lots of that this time around with people kind of hitting home with I wish I could be there, but you obviously can't, or not at this time at least. So you do what you can to make people feel at home in their homes, but still really experiencing the cool things and creative things that people are doing, like you guys. So when you started 5 years ago, Laura, were there any expectations, or did you have this image in your mind of becoming this big and this, widely spread and giving your product to everybody?
No, not at all. I mean, it's, you know, as an artist, you have lots of ideas, and most of them don't really, take off in the way that this did. And I think the thing that we were concerned about the most was, because theater is live and people buy tickets to go and experience it in person, we wondered if playwrights would be willing to let us record their plays. But we were surprised at how into it everybody was. And I think it's one of those things for for the arts community. They can say, you know, you want to hear my play, it's on Playme, maybe you want to book it. But it just also brings audiences that we would never have. I mean, we have people listening all over the world. And that's a really exciting thing for writers and actors to be able to share. And also just for Canadian culture, we try to have plays set all over the country, artists from all over the country. And it's just a really wonderful way, I think, to connect people together.
So before you became kind of under the umbrella and that backing and support, you guys, I'm sure, were a lean bunch of people trying to get actors and artists involved as well as market the product out there. How was the popularity and then how did it change once you became under the CBC umbrella?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that think, ourselves included, that if you create a podcast and you put it out there, then that's really all you have to do. Mm-hmm. But there's so many of them that it was just a slow build of radio stations such as yourself taking an interest and putting us out there and building audiences with theaters, with schools, with people that are interested in each specific play, because every play has a different topic and a different potential audience. And it's trying like 100 different ways to get people to know about us. And I think one of the challenges has been that theater audiences, which is probably our sort of main audience, they're not necessarily podcast listeners. Podcast listeners are younger, tend to be, and theater goers are a little bit older. So we're trying to merge those two demographics together. And I have to say, I think everybody has really upped their game in terms of accessing technology because of the pandemic, because it is our only way to connect. And it's just interesting also to see all the other arts companies finding ways to get their work out to people digitally. So it's a bit of a revolution, and I feel excited that we are sort of a little bit ahead of the curve and happy mm-hmm. to be able to continue to work, because it's a very hard time in the performing arts world, for sure, as it is in so many industries.
Yeah, and I'm curious, Laura, that merge that you're talking about between the younger and older audience, does that also reflect itself in the content you produce?
Yes and no. I mean, we always pick plays that are, hit shows that are about something really interesting. I don't think we ever try and play it safe with Playme. It's because it is a podcast as opposed to being broadcast on radio. We have a little bit more leeway in terms of what we can put out there. But I think just in general, we found when creating for different markets, when you skew young, it trickles up, not the other way around.
Awesome. Want to talk about the upcoming season? Give us a rundown so we know and get people excited.
Yes. Well, just on Tuesday, we released a play called Winners and Losers, which seems like a perfect play for the times right now, the day before the inauguration, where two real-life friends who are Vancouver playwrights and performers sit across from a table and play a made-up game where they debate people, places, and things and determine whether they're winners or losers, which sounds like such a, harsh thing to do, but it's a game that they play. And the play starts to trickle into their own lives in assessing whether something is successful or not successful. And it's just a really interesting play that plays with people's perception of themselves, privilege, and just that black and white definition of what's a winner and what's a loser. We also have Other Side of the Game by Amanda Paris, which won the Governor General's Award for Drama last year. She's a CBC host for a bunch of different shows. We have a show set in a classroom called Between the Sheets by Jordy Mand, which is a sort of a bit of a thriller a drama about two women who are dealing with an affair.
This is how we got here, which was a nominee for Governor General's Award by Keith Barker about an Indigenous family healing after the suicide of their son, which is a hard play, but a beautiful piece. And then we end our season with Bed and Breakfast, which is a very funny play by Mark Crawford, but two men who are married and live in the city and decide to move to the country and open a bed and breakfast without thinking it through.
Wow.
And it seems like a perfect play for the times when there's so many people that are leaving the city for small towns or realizing we don't need to be in a city right now, and also deals with other issues of inclusion, homophobia. But it's a really fun play and a great way, to, I think, to end the season in the
good
spring when hopefully things are opened up again.
Boy, Laura, these are awesome. Thank you for sharing the info. Where do we go to get more info and take a listen?
Well, you can go anywhere you get your podcasts, the CBC Listen app, and our website is cleanpodcast.com.
Superb. Laura Mullins, thank you very much for your time, and good luck with the season, and thanks for being out there. This is absolutely amazing and very enjoyable stuff for people to take in.
Thank you.
That was co-host and producer Laura Mullins chatting about the award-winning podcast series Play Me. So do check it out. Available to you using your favorite podcatcher. We'll take a break and return for the second hour of Kelly and Company. On Curious Minds, Christine Malick features a new project to describe astrological images for the blind and low vision community. Today's roundtable guest will be Brock Richardson. He'll join us a little later in hour two. But up to get the hour started, community reporter Anthony Hodgetts, he arrives with his community report.
When you tune into the show in the middle of an interview.
Have you ever tried to leash your cat?
Yes, it doesn't work.
They lie on their backs and yowl. It doesn't work.
You're listening to Kelly and Company on AMI Audio.
This weekend, our friends over on the Pulse at 10 a.m. Eastern Time are going to be speaking to Harvard professor and neuroscientist Stephen Lockley about sleep and circadian rhythm disorders for people who are vision impaired. Very much a big subject that many of us have, and I think sometimes people don't even realize the impact. On Sunday at 10 a.m. Eastern, they re-aired their conversation with Manitoba-based Indigenous rapper Matt Mad about being a blind performer on the res. The Pulse this weekend on AMI Audio, also available as a podcast. Kelly McDonald with Rumya Muthan. We're hosts of the program. Thanks for being back here with us for hour two of the show, and we're going to keep it just as busy, Rum.
Absolutely, and it's community reporter time, which means tons of busyness with taking down information. So we do our community reports here on the show Tuesdays and Thursdays. Anthony Hodgetts is joining us now with updates from Calgary, Alberta. Anthony, I'm right. You got lots of stuff for us today.
I do, but I don't have any yowling cats. I'm sorry. Because your last little PSA was talking about leashing your cats. I'm sorry. Don't get any yowling cats to lay on their back. But I got lots of other good stuff.
Our Crystal Joe. Yeah, that's right. I personally haven't tried to leash a cat myself.
Neither have I.
But apparently we got first-hand experience.
The heck out of me, so I choose not to.
You'd look great walking along with one, Rum, on a leash.
I have enough trouble trying to leash my dog, okay? So.
Yeah, but at least he pulls you along. You go out in the snow, he'll just take you for a ride, and you can just look around your farm.
Mommy, a mush.
Exactly.
Bring your own toboggan, that's what I say.
Cool.
So you're going to start with the wedding fair. Tell us about this.
Yeah, now the wedding fair, it is the biggest and longest running wedding fair in the city. It is, just a minute here, hang on. It is actually one of the longest running fairs in the city, and it runs from the, it runs, you know what, having a hard time, March 14th. It's a day long, so it runs from 9:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., and as the gentleman, Anil, has said to me, this is the one show that we do at CanWest that takes us all year to put together. They have lots of different organizations that are coming in, like wedding stores, Moors for the men who have want to get their suits, all the great stuff without all the extra distraction of other stuff. Like sometimes you go to these fairs and there's just so many places to check out, you can't see them all. It's like going to Disneyland. You're never going to get it all done in one day. But that's what these guys have set up. And they also have fashion shows, which run at 12 p.m. and 3 p.m., and they're just like a New York fashion show. They've got the runway and everything. I don't really know much about it, but Anil, who's been in the industry, has said that they have New York production values. Those are his words. So if you're looking to go to this thing, it's $25 a ticket, and it is at 1410 Olympic Way Southeast, which is the Stampede Grounds. And, yeah, you you can check them out. You can give them a call at 403-242-0859.
They also have, like, VIP ticket options, so you can contact or get on the site for more details.
Oh, and here's the other thing that is, that you won't know. If you're if you tell them that you're visually impaired, they'll give you front row seats for the show that they have the different fashion shows because of the fact that people can't see well further back. So if you're straight up with them, you can get some kind of a deal there. Doesn't cost
any. And as
any
a bonus, extra. They should do live description of the runway walks.
You know, that's not a hell. You know what? Why don't you give Anil a call and suggest that? I think that's a hell of an idea.
I would too.
Yeah, the person sit down beside you and just say, hello, take a listen. Now I'm going to tell you what's going on now, right now.
Oh,
but that's
amazing.
Two seats you're using up.
Yeah.
Well, you'd be good for that. You would be great for that, actually, man.
Yeah, I would.
Have you ever gone to a wedding fair, Rami? I actually think you may have when your friend got married. What was your experience with it?
Well, we went to one wedding store, like a dress store, to get bridesmaids' dresses, and that was a lot of shopping, like you said. I mean, imagine if you're going into a dress store and there's already racks and racks and racks of dresses that you have to go through and pick colors and pick themes and sizes and fits and preferences. I can't imagine what an entire wedding fair would be like, the experience of that. But I'm so curious, though. It's a lot, but I'm still curious.
There are other shows, there are other wedding fairs in the city, but because they've been around 30 years, they have the reputation. So, like I said, CanWest has got some other shows that I'll be dropping here in the future, but they're one of the biggest companies in the city, so they're great at what they do. And they do these shows in other places as well sometimes, so you'll get, like, the Halloween show is only here, but some of the other shows they do them in all the other venues, and they literally go to each venue, check it out, make sure that everything works right, and so the experience for the customer is just A number one.
Nice.
Awesome. Sir, you got Inside Out Theater and their online offerings.
Yeah, actually, what I discovered, I was doing, they sent an email out about it, and it was The Wizard of Oz. It was where they would kind of test the script out. I forget the exact name of it, but you would literally test the script and make sure everything was working correctly. The woman who played Dorothy, she was actually part of the Inside Out Theater team, and she's visually impaired. She did a great job of it, actually. So I went. It was all on YouTube. You just basically they do it two ways. Sometimes they use Zoom. Sometimes they use YouTube. In this case, they used Zoom, and they also had a video camera crew there. And they did it like you would do one of those TV shows for one of the big services, right? They had like two or three camera angles on this thing. Now I didn't see that, but that's what it was like a Netflix production, basically.
Wow.
And it was pretty amazing, actually. Just four people or five people, six people sitting on the stage at the Max Bell Theater, which took them days to get organized because this was in the midst of the pandemic when things were just starting to reboot themselves and there was lots of protocols that had to occur. So they got her done. They were doing a lot of it on Zoom as far as getting it together. But once it was there, they literally did it live from the theater. So you almost felt like you were there.
That is actually so much fun. I love the idea of it, and I get it. It's a struggle because theaters, they need to make some money and things like that, and we're trying to still get people to buy into buying tickets for some of the theater stuff that's available. But they've got a whole year ahead of offerings ahead, don't they?
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. They've got some orchestra and some opera stuff coming up as well. I haven't seen the whole calendar yet, but like I said, this is going to be their 2021 season. So you can always go to InsideOutTheater.com, or you can call the box office at 282-4801. I'm sure Cole and those guys would be lovely to talk to you. They're great. They're a great team over there.
Well, people can't help get excited, I'm sure, even with the virtual prospect. It's not the same, I know, for a lot of actors now, but everybody's embracing and trying to work this out and have learned a lot of things in 8 months. We'll put up the links to on our blog, ami.ca/Kelly Co.
All right, let's move on to the third one then. This one's super exciting. I'm seeing more and more of these, and I get excited every time. Audiobook Club CNIB Calgary, and this is virtual.
Yes. They've been doing this for quite a while. Sometimes I miss it, but I'm going to make more of an effort to check it out. I've been to a couple of CNIB book clubs, and they're all awesome. But this one is local to us, and it's basically you just bring a book that you've been reading, and you talk about it. And everybody sort of swaps titles, and it's really great. So if you're interested, you can give Amber Duje a call at 403-266-8831 or email her, because everyone's working from home nowadays, at amber.duje, that's D-U-J-A-Y, at cnib.ca, and she'll hook you up. It's done on a telephone this time, so you just phone a toll-free number, punch in a couple numbers, and you're good to go. You stick it on speaker, and off you go.
Nice. Yeah, that's really good. I love how flexible it is. I know that a lot of us who've been part of book clubs, have you been part of any book clubs, Anthony?
Not recently, but until I started doing some of the CNIB ones, I used to go to this particular book club here, but then okay. My life got just busy with yoga and other such things, so I wasn't able to, but now I'm able to, and it's really good to get back into it. I love learning from other folks. How was your experience?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly what I was going to say. You know, before it was mostly in person, because there's the perks of having an in-person book club, right? You're doing it over dinner or drinks or snacks or cookies, exactly. But now the other side of it is you get the perks of being at home, being comfortable. Maybe there's themes with different foods and whatever, but aside from that, you can kind of run things any time of day, weekends, whatever may be. And there's just that comfort level of staying at home and reading.
Yeah, I'm involved with the book club now. It's at 8 o'clock my time on a Tuesday. It's pretty on a Thursday or Tuesday. All the days run together, but I always make sure that. And the nice thing is, it allows you to have authors come in as well. The one in CNIB Toronto they had an author come in and talk to us. So you know, that's the beauty of doing it virtually. You can bring in people from anywhere.
Yes, and I think it's also more flexible in how long you want to stay, right? It could be a 2-hour time period. Maybe you can't make the full 2 hours, but you're not really causing much of a disturbance by saying, okay guys, I gotta hop off this call. So that's also a plus. Yeah, I like it. Sounds good. And then they require registration, so you're contacting Lauren Taylor.
Okay. Yes, I'm sorry, I gave you the wrong name. Lauren Taylor is the person you contact at Lauren, L-A-U-R-E-N dot Taylor at cnib.ca or 403-266-8831.
Okay. Sounds good, man. Thank you so much for bringing us these topics.
Thank you.
ami.ca/Kelly Co. for all of Anthony's information from today's report. And he'll be back next month.
You ever thought of being part of a book club that is specific, a specific genre?
Probably not.
Would that work for you now?
No.
Yeah. I mean,
I want to come out of my comfort zone.
Well, some people belong to those sci-fi ones. We know Ryan Hui could do well with
that. Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, always gathering up lots of information because we're a curious bunch. We've got curious minds ahead. Speaking of, stick around as Christine Malick joins us after this. Coming up, we still have the roundtable in a little bit. Brock Richardson joining us to have a little chat, have some fun, kick around some items. Geez, it's interesting how I'm so used to having certain people on it. Mark was going to join us today, our video TV editor. our audio TV editor, and Mark Phoenix, and he's a little under the weather. So I look at the questions. I thought, oh, that was a particular one I was really looking forward to Mark talking about.
Yep.
And Ramya weighing in on. And now I got you and Brock. Ah, well. Anyway.
Still good. Still good.
Folks, it's time to get to one of our favorite segments in a month, because there's so many always cool things this lady brings to the show for us. It brings them up close because we're always wanting to know stuff. We're so curious. Let's get into Curious Minds.
Whatever happened to? What does that mean? How does that work?
Oh, I didn't know that.
I never knew. I'm Christine Malik, and this is Curious Minds, a monthly dive into arts and culture from a blindness perspective.
Wow. Christine, this topic is really interesting. All of us are always so curious how we could reach out, touch the stars, or see what the Milky Way is all about. Today we're chatting about astronomy and a new project out describing astronomical images for the blind community. And hello and welcome back.
Hi, thank you. Astronomy is one of my favorite subjects, and so I loved researching this segment. So the Chandra X-ray Observatory is a telescope that's not located on Earth, which is taking images from very far away of astronomical phenomena. And so this data is of use to researchers, but Chandra and NASA have a mission to make it accessible to the general public as well. And so their very recent innovation is to have a professional audio describer describe the images that get posted on their website. Kim Arcan is a visualization scientist and emerging tech lead with NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory Center for Astrophysics, Harvard and Smithsonian. Wouldn't you love that on a business card?
Good grief.
She's been
especially in Braille.
She's been the one working on this project, and I spoke to her about Chandra's mission to make its work more available to our community. The website will be available in our show notes, and from that link, if you do a find command or a search for the words visual description, then you will get to some downloadable and listenable stuff. And if you go to just their website, which is Chandra, chandra.si.edu, the images at the top, so J1818, for example, you can enter on those and then look for the words visual description, and that's how you find the descriptions that have been written. And so here's my conversation with Kim about the project.
Kim, can you start by telling us a little bit about what Chandra is and what happens there?
Of course. So Chandra is a telescope that goes about a third of the way to the moon in order to do its work looking out at the high-energy universe. Chandra is specifically designed to be able to detect X-ray emission from some of the really hot regions of our universe. Think things like exploded stars, clusters of galaxies, and matter around black holes.
So it's generally things that are not visible to the naked eye, is that right?
Correct. We are studying a kind of light that human eyes could never directly detect.
And so you describe yourself as a visualization scientist, is that correct?
Yes, I do like to essentially work with data to be able to translate it into various forms that can then be used, interpreted, explored, experienced, and those forms can take many different ways. So things from two-dimensional images to three-dimensional prints to even types of sound.
I really want to talk about the sonifications before we get into talking about the image descriptions, because that's how I came to get to know you, was through Matt Russo, who some of our listeners may have encountered when he did sonification presentations on astronomy and music in Toronto. And so Matt has done some amazing work with you. Can you tell a bit about that?
Yes, I've been actually very excited to work with Matt over the past 6 or so months. We started working together because over the past few years, I've spent a lot of time and effort working on ways to take this data and bring it into a 3D form so that it could be used in, say, a 3D print for a 3D model or something else for like virtual reality. And we were using those models as ways to work with different audiences when we were out and about in public settings. And then, of course, the pandemic hit and all that work just felt like it was really difficult to be able to do when everyone was stuck at home. So at that point, we had already done a little bit of work researching data sonifications or translating data into sound in order to attach it to our virtual reality applications. But again, wanted to do something much simpler for the staying at home times that we've been in. So we started working with Matt to create simpler two-dimensional data sonifications where we took things like a center of the innermost regions of the Milky Way, an area around a bunch of baby stars, a star that exploded, and translating that information into sound using the different kinds of light, the X-ray light, the infrared light, the optical light, whatever, into all these layers of an experience that feels almost sort of musical as a way to be able to express the data and particularly to help work with audiences who I just was not able to reach during the pandemic that I have been able to do in previous ways. And that's particularly people who are either blind or low vision. So the data sonification became an important way to be able to have a sort of rapid response to work with audiences and community members that we had been working with prior in different ways. But, you know, it opened up just a whole new world for me. It's just been a project that has been so much fun and went viral. And I've just been so pleasantly surprised at the response to it.
So are you getting response to that outside the blind and low vision community?
Yes, for sure. So we found that we were included in NASA's SoundCloud, for example. They occasionally put out SoundClouds, and they included about 5 or 6 pieces from the first batch of data sonifications in their SoundCloud. And it's got about 1 million downloads or listens in about a week and a half.
Yeah. Wow.
And these data sonifications, the Chander ones specifically, were at the top. So they were the most popular ones in the playlist. And I hate to boast too much, but it was so wonderful seeing such a positive response to something that, you know, I truly created it with the idea of making data more accessible for people from a community that I wanted to be able to continue to work with. And so to be able to reach more people just helped show, like, when you take the time to make a resource accessible, everybody benefits, and it can create a meaningful experience for people that, I, again, the response to it was just so overwhelming. I just would never have expected it.
I've been a long time astronomy buff, and I would read the captions on the types of images we're talking about, and I would read them and I'd puzzle, and I'd read them again and I'd scratch my head, and I'd read them again and I'd puzzle some more. And so I'm really intrigued by the idea that you and Chandra have partnered with a professional audio describer to help make those descriptions a bit more accessible. Can you say a bit about that process?
Yeah, I think it's all about these different steps that you can take to make things just more accessible, more clear, more valuable. And again, we're working with data that is invisible, that is also tends to be a little esoteric. We're talking about areas around black holes and colliding galaxies, massive clusters of galaxies. These things are often well beyond a human's everyday experiences and comprehension. And so there's a lot of work that has to go into that translation process. And I think I particularly was inspired by your own podcast that you have that talks about some of these ways to do image descriptions specifically for the community and how helpful that can be. So it was just kind of, it just seemed like another natural step to take to be able to move from not only taking data and sonifying it, but also just taking data and describing it in a really clear way. And I really actually am quite proud of the result of that so far. We just posted the very first, I guess, test round, if you will, of these visual descriptions. And this first one that we did a test with was the J1818 Magnetar. Now, a magnetar is in itself sounds like a very exotic thing. It is essentially a type of neutron star, which is an incredibly dense object made up mostly of, as you guessed it probably, neutrons that are very densely packed together. So magnetars are in and of themselves a very special class of neutron stars because they have these incredibly powerful magnetic fields, right? None of this are we going to be able to see with human eyes directly. So the idea of being able to take this resulting image that includes X-ray and infrared data in this case, and then to sort of annotate it and describe it and discuss it in a way that is approachable for people who can't see it directly, this resulting image, helps, but also really, I think, benefits anybody who's trying to understand a concept that could sound pretty abstract when, you know, you just toss out the word magnetar and extremely powerful magnetic field. So it really, for me, feels like a win-win situation because we're taking something and making it accessible for someone, but also for everyone. At least that's what I'm hoping it's doing.
I wonder a lot about that too, because I had a sneak peek at the J1818 and I found the description produced by the audio describer so much easier to process because there were shorter sentences, there were a lot more nouns used, like it wasn't it and that, and there was more specificity, and I'm really curious as to whether those descriptions will gain traction with people who don't need the description, but who find that way of writing a little more accessible in the intellectual sense. I'm really curious about that.
I am very curious about that myself, because again, I've found over and over now when we make something and try something different with it, so many people can benefit. So I think there's a lot of possibility here. And I definitely agree with this type of visual description. You have a different point that you're making. You're not just describing all of the science, like what you have to do in the press release parts, right? When you're able to just concentrate on describing the main visual, you also get to be, I don't know, maybe a little more poetic. And I don't mean that in a non-scientific specific way, but you are able to use words that are just more descriptive than just saying what the science is. You can describe what is happening in the image. And it does feel like there's just a lot of room for people being able to take that new description and learn something quite different from it. Which again is still very scientifically accurate, but just has a different point of view. And I really like that idea, right? Isn't this whole idea is just about taking in different perspectives and being able to process that and produce something better, something newer perhaps, but something better. And so I very much look forward to seeing what people respond to this. And we're using it not only as a standalone text description, we also have an audio version. We're including it as the alt text for the image itself, and also on social media, including it as the alt text. So as it goes out beyond the Chander website, it'll be available in other forms as well.
That's fantastic. How can our listeners find it?
Well, so right now it's featured on the very top of the Chander website, chander.si.edu. If you click on the main image, that will show J1818. And we intend to do this of the next at least half dozen releases that we do and see how people are responding to them and hopefully keep going well beyond that.
Incredible conversation, Christine Malik. Kim had so much vital stuff. You can find that too. Our show notes will be at ami.ca/KellyCo. We'll take a break. The roundtable with Ramya, myself, and Brock Richardson, who joins us up next.
Isn't it convenient that we have a round table?
Well, it's actually oval.
just saying.
Yeah, the blind guy feels it now, goes, well, I guess it is oval.
Kind of oval.
Welcome back to the program. It is that time on a Thursday. We have an open conversation with some items handpicked by myself. We invite Brock Richardson in. He's the host of The Neutral Zone, heard Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, and also available via podcast through AMI Audio. He's joining Rummy and I to kick around a few items. And on the break, Brock, we were having this little discussion as our little Mizamuthin here was doing some editing and saying, get out of here, which made you think and mixed me up thinking, oh, it's Friday then, because Kelly says that, get out of here, will you? Then you asked me the question, when did you start doing it? Why? I think that's how you worded it. Was it why you started or when?
Why? Because I think you did it right from the beginning.
Me too.
I think it was right from the word.
And I can answer your question by telling you I have no idea. it's interesting because something must have happened. We must have been doing something on the show, and it just was something that started, and I started to do that on the Friday. So I guess I better put that out here because I really have always just felt, and at that time, the show was on at a different time. We won't talk about that since I have a heck of a time making that adjustment in my head when we switched the show from 3 o'clock till 5. I guess I will mention it. From 3 to 5 to 2 to 4. I still today have a lot of problem with that. So we were the last show on the air. And on Friday until Monday, that was it. So it was, you know, get out of here, will you? So I've always worried that yourself, the panelists, and Corinne Van Dusen might take offense to that. But I think Corinne now figures, well, it's Friday. He can tell everybody to get lost.
Yeah, no, I everyone has their things that they do. Since the pandemic, I've started to say on Fridays, be safe and we'll talk to you next week. And it just, again, I can't tell you why it started. It just started a few months back and it's like, okay, I guess that's going to stick. So we all have our things. I hope I don't have to be saying that forever because I hope we can all get back to some form of normalcy sooner rather than later. But it just seems to be something that stuck with me. So I guess we all have our things.
Anything, Rum, that you find you've been saying to whether it's family, friends, or whatever since the pandemic like that?
No, I don't think I'm cool enough. Yeah,
I was just going to say, nope, I don't really care. Just be safe or do whatever you want to do, folks. I don't really, yeah, it's fine. I'm worried about me being safe.
I say the same stuff all the time anyway.
Like, do you go by the mirror and say, Rum, you be safe?
No.
It's funny because I think people will say a lot of time that when you get into a situation like we're in with the pandemic, so many things, because we're not ourselves. We've said this enough times on the program. Our world has changed from what it was, and we are not behaving the way we used to. I think most of us would safely say, yeah, for the most part, me. But on the other hand, there are those little things that we've acquired, Brock. And I think you're right. It's little things like that that are, some are subtle, some are pretty big, you know, whether now, it's, you know, a fear or just something you do differently.
Now, I say this about me saying be safe, and knowing me, I'll forget to say it tomorrow and, you know, come on here and say, oh, yeah, this is what I've come to say. And then tomorrow I'm likely to forget, but I doubt it. It's just something that sticks in your mind. And it's the timing, and I find it sort of, I get a chuckle when you say, you know, you're still not necessarily used to the, you know, 2 to 4 and still getting caught up with the 3 to 5. When we get in our routines of this is what we're doing, it does take us a while to break out of those when something gets changed.
It's crazy. I send messages to get people to come on the roundtable or for voices or whatever when I'm, you know, inviting somebody on. And I am terrified of anyone out of the same time zone now. And I'm a big, hey, let's not move the time backwards or forwards or anything, because maybe that remotely will help me. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I want to talk on a medical subject, guys. Nova Scotia is going to be the first jurisdiction in North America to implement presumed consent for organ donation. Take a listen.
Under the Human Organ and Tissue Donation Act, all people in Nova Scotia will be considered potential organ donors unless they opt out. The medical director of the province's organ and tissue donation program says an opt-out registry has been developed and safeguards are in place, like checking with families to ensure the last known wishes of a potential donor are respected. Dr. Stephen Bede says those who tell their families they don't want to be donors will not be donors, even if they haven't opted out. He says organ donations could rise by 30% to 50% within 5 years. Jerry Smith, The Canadian Press.
Community reporter Milena was in studio with us, Ramya, and we got into a conversation about organ donors. She is a recipient, and she has had many discussions, spoke in front of crowds, and talked and heard people express how one person's body, somebody who's agreed to donate, how many people that has helped in any donations that people do, let alone organ donations. I don't really have much more experience. I mean, I have friends definitely who have received for different medical situations, totally have always believed in it since I was a child. I like to presume, because of course years ago it was, well, there's a part of your license, you can fill this out and so on. Well, I don't have a license. It was that process, and I think anything that makes any of us say, yeah, I'd like to do that, I'll go to the website later, and we just don't get around to it.
Exactly. And that's, I think, one of the biggest reasons why, as you heard, 30 to 50% increase in the next five years, because all those people who want to, right? Like if you took a poll right now and said, how many of you want to be organ donors? A lot of us would say yes, or I'm thinking about it, or that's something that I'd like to do. We just don't get around to it because there's so many things we need to get around to. Whereas this opt-out version of it, I think, is a way to handle that. Let's just say it that way. It's a way to handle the people who may not get around to putting their name on the list. And then that other caveat of, well, if you told your family you don't want to donate organs, then that also counts, right? Because then that's, you've said it out loud. People around you are aware that you don't want to be part of the donation. So it's something to think about, but also, like you said, with Milena's experience, Kels, so many people we may or may not know have had to have organs donated to them at one point in their lives, or just being on the list, or just waiting. And it's a really difficult thing to even imagine or fathom. So I can't imagine how helpful it would be.
Well, and it's a lot of younger people who are unfortunate enough to have something very catastrophic happen.
Yeah.
That we're harvesting the organs from. And Brock, I've heard some of the scary thing about it is if they're not ready, they do the harvesting. How many organs have gone to waste because certain provinces, certain situations aren't ready to deal with it, to store, or there's almost like a surplus of the people who want it, and yet who want to donate, there are people out there who need them, and there's a breakdown between.
Yeah, I think for me growing up, I was always the first to say, "Oh no, I don't want this. I don't want to donate my organs." And then my father once sat me down and said, "Can I ask you a question?" And I was probably 10, and he said, "What are you doing with those organs once you're not living?" And I said, "Nothing, I'm dead." And he goes, "Yeah, that's the point." He says, "Donate it to people that need it." And so for me, when I have an opportunity to say, you know, I will tell you if I don't want it, then I'll tell you. But otherwise, assume that I do, because as Ramya pointed out, we get around to doing so many other things, and it's like, we forget, and a lot of us don't mean to. It just happens that way. And so for me, I would be all on board if Ontario decided to do this, and you know, we could just tell people if we don't want it. And it's the young people that when things happen, as you point out, that don't want to talk about it because they say, "Oh, well, I'm only this age." Well, you never know if something can happen. So if you can prevent that step of making your family make that decision by it already being, you're on the list, and then unless you tell them otherwise, it just goes on like that.
So true. And that's kind of, I think, would be the worst thing to have to sit there. Sorry to bother you, but do you mind if we, you know, it says here,
where,
could you people move out of the room here? Your goodbyes, we have to get to work while we can. I think that would be so difficult. And I'm kind of hoping for the shift that many of us have to understand this if this became more legal in more places. A legendary record producer spent his last years as a convicted murderer, has died. Phil Spector was 81. Entertainment correspondent Bill Deal looks back on his life.
Phil Spector was perhaps the most influential record producer in history, creating a layered production technique known as the wall of sound. You can hear it on records like Be My Baby by the Ronettes and singles by the other girl group Spector produced, like this one by the Crystals. As well as this worldwide hit by the Righteous Brothers. Spector also worked on what became the Beatles' final album, Let It Be, as well as solo albums by John Lennon and George Harrison. With few exceptions, Phil Spector mostly dropped out of the spotlight in the 70s following a horrific car accident and was inactive in the 80s and 90s. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1989. In 2003, Phil Spector was charged with murder after actress Lana Clarkson was fatally shot at his home. Following a mistrial, he was found guilty in 2009 and sentenced to 19 years to life in prison. Bill Deal, ABC News.
Wow, what a life. Not really here to talk about any of that part of it. The wall of sound we talked about when I was in broadcast school, probably Rum, you guys might have a little bit with music history and stuff like that. What I want to kind of know, is there any particular sound that you can think of for music that you've liked? We used to say that country music had like the nicest, cleanest sound, most kind of real sound. We have instruments that get grabbed and kind of played out for a lot. The disco sound or whatever. What was big there? What stood out that made some people? Was it just the beat? The hi-hats? What was it? I get annoyed when I think about how sound changed in the 80s. Became a little more electronic. Think of a band like Chicago that was all big, real orchestrated kind of sound, then all of a sudden went more electronic to save space and members and stuff like that. And it really was noticeable, but it was also the time. Many artists were falling into that sound. And I'm not talking a type of music, a specific sound. Rum, anything with your knowledge, you play a lot with music, stuff that you would point to.
Yeah, and you know what? For me, it's got to stay in the percussion range. I know a lot of the examples you're mentioning, you notice it through either synths or percussion, mm-hmm. right? Like that yes. electronic sound. And I think that it comes with the improvement of music, you know, with the changes that come with music come with the improvements, right? The sound quality and the spatial audio and everything like that. But for percussion, Kels, I always marveled because I come from the East, from East Asia, and when you could take hand drums and hand percussion and record them in such a clean fashion, like as if you're hearing it live, so you're not getting any of that synthetic sample or anything like that, or the you know rip off of a hand drum, but you're getting the clean sounds from the original hand drumming and the actual rhythms of it, and what you could play authentically, like what someone could be sitting down in cross-legged and playing but recorded to what we know as studio tracks. Right.
And could you use it almost like a backbeat?
You could. Yeah. Like, I guess you could, you know, if you were using some kind of loop, but it, insanely enough, it just never felt like a loop. It felt with certain genres of music that I'd listened to that somebody was there playing it throughout that whole thing. I don't know what it was, but it was just gorgeous. Yes, exactly. And I was like, wow, you can't get that through drum samples MIDI, right? We just can't do it.
Oh, that's amazing. Anything, Brock, you want to put out that you found, and again, it's within music that you find it, within a type of music, you know, and something an artist may use or a music producer?
Two things that I like. I really like the electric guitar sound on country music songs. Keith Urban is really, really good at going on an electric guitar and doing long stretches of you know, sets of extending songs. And I hadn't really been introduced to the electric guitar in the country music scene until I saw Keith Urban live. And it was like, wow, he is really good at electric guitar and the sound that comes out of it. The other thing that I like is acoustic. When people just do stripped down acoustic songs where it's just them and a guitar, because I like the sound of the guitar, but I also like people have, I believe, much better voices now when you strip it down and you take the music aside and you can really sit there and admire their voice and go, wow, they're doing that with nothing more than an acoustic guitar. It's pretty amazing.
Is there a, like Rum, you were describing the drums. Has there been a song or something that you always find amazing because you listen to, and kind of a little bit away from the sound that I'm thinking really when it comes to types of music or something that a producer tends to do, but is there a sound that you've, what the heck is that? That is really cool. Whether it's music or some kind of production sound that you've always just wondered, I wonder how that was made, or that you find absolutely, for me, my example, and people chuckle at me, the darn old Godzilla movies. The only time I've ever heard the sound, Genuine used it in a song, but that song sound couldn't be recreated for when they wanted to make one of the movies. People didn't exactly know how the original noise was made. And now, of course, they do. They can do whatever, pull it off of original stuff and make it sound a lot cleaner digitally. Is there a sound like that that jumps out at you that you've liked, whether it's been music or some kind of production sound that someone's created?
I don't know. I can't really think of something particular, Kels. I mean, I was thinking of like,
you will later.
You know, that rainfall. Yeah, I definitely will. This will be top of mind. But I do just, because you talked about them using and recreating sound in a lot of hip hop, but now almost everywhere, just the samples of older music being used in newer music, right? Just samples of any kind, but to the point where sometimes you can't even recognize it because they've changed it so much. And then you only find out when you've heard the background of how the song was put together. And they're like, yeah, we took this, we reversed it, we flipped it, then we added some other octaves, and then voila. And I was like, what? Yeah. That's from the original song? Yeah.
Brock, you're, as a country fan, old, new country, is there, I know you don't, like, there's, I think you have a cutoff point, I think you told me once, of where, you know, I won't listen back further than that. Does old country sound, that sound too country? Too what for you?
Further, nothing goes back further for me than the 90s, but the sound that is the country music sound is that instrument, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but it's the slidey board where they slide, and it's that wow sound, like it's automatic lap steel. Thank
lap
you, Matt.
Steel.
It's such a sound for country music, and when that starts, you're just like, this is country music. And now they're thinking of different ways to add it into different songs, because sometimes you can listen to that and go, wow, that's too twangy.
It's really interesting. I find it fascinating and always have with the different sounds, what makes up that sound, that music, and decade, time, everything really varies. And that's just our music, let alone all around the world. Brock, thanks a lot for joining us on the roundtable.
Thank you.
Brock, he's host of The Neutral Zone, their show Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. He'll appear on our show just before to give us a tee-up tomorrow as to what they're speaking about and what's going on. Rum and I will be back to do much the same on our show. Tell you about it and what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown after this. At this point in the program, we always like to stop, take a moment and think, hey, what's all been on the show? Maybe you want to listen back via podcast, where you can listen to the complete Kelly and Company podcast, including the audio vanity card. Check out Rumya's today. I did yesterday's as we celebrate 1,000 episodes. Jeff on Tuesday, and Matt's got a big one Friday for us with a lineup of different outtakes and different sounds and things that you might find, you will find hilarious, as a matter of fact. We always like to suggest you listen to the complete Kelly and Company podcast, but you can always listen to the segments. So speaking of which, Rum, Any particular segment you want to call some attention to today?
I got to say, Michael Fair's tech updates for the last 2 weeks when he was highlighting two different task management and to-do apps. Last week was Notebooks 10, and this week was the Bear app. It was really intriguing because, one, you have kind of traditional, very intricate, you know, organize in categories and subcategories and make sure you code everything the way you want to so you can go in later and flip through quickly, find what you need to. But it's really for the very organized person, right? Whereas today, you kind of just put whatever you want. As long as you put a tag on it, you can search for it later. To me, it's like, oh, the messy version of organizing.
Yeah, so but just, it helps you so much. But that tag and just the little things that we know, people don't have time to do too much detail, too much work to put something down.
That's right. So it's one for one kind of person. And that's why I think the both of them were great highlights. People can check out last week's on the podcast as well.
We had a really interesting conversation with Laura, with PlayMe, talking about theatrical productions that are converted into a podcast form. CBC now supports them. They're under that umbrella, and it's really wonderful stuff to listen to. They've got a great season ahead. You can learn about the season, but really how they came to be in 2016 and why, and especially at a time when we're doing so much virtually. Curious Minds, also a good segment, and we learned about flowers with our gardener. Now to learn about what's coming up on Now with Dave Brown. Hello, sir. Paul Daniel joins us. He is the producer, one of the producers over there. What do you have on the Friday edition?
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Ramya.
Hey.
On tomorrow's show, we'll have a regular Friday news panel with journalist Megan Gilmore and Michelle McQuigg joining Dave Brown to discuss some of the big issues of the week, including the expulsion of Ontario MP Derek Sloan from the Conservative Party caucus, talk about how intensive care units across the country are nearing capacity and what it might mean for people with disabilities. On a lighter note, entertainment critic Michael McNeely will preview the upcoming Sundance Film Festival, and Greg David from our marketing department will tell us about some of the affordable streaming services available for people on a tight budget.
Saw David Leposky on the news, our friend, talking about this, especially as they roll out the triage plan. Many groups also across this province, anyway, and I'm sure around the country, disability-related groups, very fearful, wanting to see what the plan is and some of the things that doctors are telling us. Look, please, we don't want to have to make this kind of decision. So it's not good, Paul.
No, it isn't.
Looking forward to that conversation. Thanks, pal.
Take care.
Check out the show 9 a.m. in the morning right here on AMI. That's Now with Dave Brown. Rum, we gather for our Friday edition beginning at 2.
Yes, we do, Kels. Talk tomorrow.
John Beeler, he'll be here from the app show with our end of the week app update. Sylvie Fiquette, she'll be here with the, she'll be telling us about the latest on the almost live theater series by Vocal Eye, including two upcoming virtual shows. There's a new user-friendly app making headway in the audiobook and ebook world. Ryan Huey, he's got the details for us. We're going to kick back and listen to an Artist Corner feature from the past. Bill Shackleton will return for The Buzz, and producer Jeff Ryman, he's got the latest lifestyle headlines. It's Friday, folks. We open the gateway to your weekend starting at 2 p.m. Eastern tomorrow. Enjoy your Thursday night. Take care of yourself. Stick around. Late Edition up next.
We're at 1,001 episodes now with Kelly and Company, and I gotta say, when I listened to this show, before I was co-hosting on it, when I was just a listener and when I was in the control room with Matt for most of my days, listening to Sharon and Kelly co-host the show, I used to think, wow, they are just so warm. This show is so warm and friendly, and anytime someone comes on, I remember specifically with Tom Decker, you know, and lots of love to Tom, because anytime he would come on or other contributors would come on, I would think, oh my gosh, everyone's just having such a good time. Everyone's so friendly and loving and welcoming, you know, and I didn't want any of that to change when I became co-host. So listening back to some of the segments when we were playing some of that archived audio, I definitely was nervous. I was more shy and reserved before, but I feel that warmth. I feel that we still continue to offer on Kelly and Company this loving, warm vibe of anyone and everyone, welcome, and come on and join the conversation with us. Because Kelly and I, we're like that. We're genuinely friends, and we genuinely, all four of us, Matt, Jeff, Kelly, and I, love chatting with each other. We all feel very welcome in our space, so we wanted to extend that to everyone and continue to extend that to everybody throughout our years of working together and our years of little changes here and there on the show, but just saying, guys, at the end of the day, we want it to be welcoming. So I'm glad we've reached this milestone, and I'm so glad we're continuing for another 1,000 episodes, as everyone has so kindly said. And it's just been a fantastic time working with everybody and listening to everybody, and as Kelly always says, learning from everyone also.
You've been listening to the complete Kelly and Company podcast experience.
The Real Deal airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform.